Good evening. Welcome to Baccalaureate, April 25, 2015. Thank you to Aaron Hershey and Chloe Raber for the prelude and processional music. This evening and tomorrow afternoon, we celebrate the accomplishments of more than 450 Eastern Mennonite University graduating students. This is a time of endings and beginnings. Students, commencement tomorrow afternoon signifies just that, the ending of your time here at EMU and a new beginning. We mark this transition with symbolism and ceremony. Baccalaureate, from the Latin word for the laurels given to advanced students, is by tradition a service in celebration of and thanksgiving for lives dedicated to learning and wisdom. Both at baccalaureate and at commencement, we recognize the work of God in and through people, ideas, and experiences. Our thanksgiving is first to God, but also to families, fellow students, faculty, staff, and administration. To all of you who have come for these special events, on behalf of the students, faculty, staff, and administration, welcome. I invite Dr. Lauren Swartzentruber, president of Eastern Mennonite University, to offer the invocation. This will be followed by singing, led by Christian Parks, 2015 graduate. Christian is from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and will be completing a theater major with a Bible and religion minor.
Please join me in prayer as we invoke God's presence among us. God of love and grace, we've come together this evening for a particular purpose, to celebrate, to worship, to express our gratitude to you, to be inspired for the unknown journey ahead. We acknowledge that you've been present among us even when we have not always recognized you. Sometimes in the brokenness and fragmentation of your world, we've questioned your existence and we've wondered if you are the God of love. We confess that in our humanness we have failed to be channels of your inexhaustible love. In our striving to be faithful, we have frequently replaced you with ourselves. And in our deep desire to know your calling in our lives, we have too often been arrogant and smug. Tonight, we give thanks for your patience and your grace. We give thanks for opportunities to mature, to increase our knowledge, to hone our gifts. Remind us daily that whatever maturity we have gained, whatever knowledge is ours, whatever gifts we have received, to offer these in your service, not for our own gain, but for the common good. Bless us now as we enter into this worship service. Amen.
Good evening. Thanks. So for the first section of hymns, we will have in your hymn the worship book. For all those who aren't Mennonite and don't know, it's the blue one. And the second song, I'll give you time to do that later, but will be 124 in the purple. For these hymns, I chose a journey because I've been on one for the last 4 years. And so hymn number one was a hymn that was formational for me while I was at Christopher Dock Mennonite High School. So I brought it into me freshman year because I had no clue what this place was. So please stand with me as we sing number one.
Thank you.
So I recognize that I'm young and I have a lot of energy and I move the songs very fast like. And so I encourage you to work with me. I love your singing and work with me. Thanks.
Graduate senior class co-presidents will be giving voice to their EMU experience by bringing senior class salutations. Carissa Harnish is from Mannheim, Pennsylvania, and is graduating summa cum laude with majors in biology and Spanish and an honors minor. Carissa is a member of the honors program and has also received cords of distinction. Everett Brubaker is from Harrisonburg, Virginia, and is graduating magna cum laude with an environmental sustainability major and minors in business administration and sociology. Carissa and Everett are now invited to come to the podium.
Thanks. Welcome, family, friends, and EMU community to graduation weekend. Thank you for joining in our celebration. I'm Carissa Harnish, here with Everett Brubaker, and we have had the privilege of serving as 2015 senior class co-presidents.
Many months ago, Chris and I were made aware of the fact that we would be speaking at Baccalaureate. And so naturally, we began working on this speech yesterday. We wanted to do something beyond simply summarizing all the experiences we have shared over our time here at EMU. So yesterday, Chris and I ran around EMU, politely interrupting professors in the throngs of grading. We swung by VACA, the psych department, nursing, and more. We asked them, your teachers and mentors, for their perspective on the class of 2015.
We, as a class, have made a distinctive impression. Our professors have described us as intellectually curious and out-of-the-box thinkers. We have used our creativity and work ethic to face the many challenges over the last 4 years. Economics professor Jim Lehman says his senior students have demonstrated an audaciousness to question the common ways of knowing. Spanish professor Carol Sanfaikma described her seniors as being motivated to apply their skills in the world outside EMU. We are a class of grit, of commitment, of focus, which has brought us to this point and which will carry us into the future.
Class of 2015, we are a thoughtful and fun-loving group. Over 4 years, our professors have seen our creative ways of approaching situations and our ability to be present and inclusive. Psychology professor Kim Brenneman has seen the seniors in her department develop what she describes as a real sense of thankfulness, working at making gratefulness a part of daily living. We are supportive, we listen, we imagine, we laugh. Cindy Gussler remembered yesterday of a time in class when, after asking Jordan Luther about his time in Turkey, received the reply, "I had the most life-altering bath." While feelings of inadequacy, unpreparedness, uncertainty, and doubt may be very present with you as you leave this place, know that your professors and mentors have witnessed incredible growth in you over the last 4 years. And they are confident that you are equipped to engage with the various contexts you will find yourselves in, whether that be on a hospital floor, a classroom, the mission field, a church, in a studio, in your community, or across the globe.
University life is not one that only occurs in the classroom. We have shared hours over dinner in the caf, braved cold weather at soccer games, danced in Park Cabin thanks to the dirty north, traveled to places as close as DC and as far away as China, and supported each other through all the papers, exams, and breakups. This year, we make up 1/3 of all intramural sports participation and led many clubs and organizations while still managing to cook for each other. It is these experiences that have made our time at EMU so valuable as we grew and learned together, applying our classroom knowledge to our greater life experiences.
As we leave this place, which in many ways has been and will continue to be a huge piece of our identity, remember that to thoughtfully reflect is to invite growth. Reflecting is essential to becoming an effective person, a growing, maturing, dynamic person. Reflection is individual. It helps us reshape hardship and trouble into growth. And most of us have experienced this in cross-culturals, sharing living spaces with a diverse range of people, wrestling with spirituality through 4 years of undergraduate studies. Reflection is communal, as sometimes we need to see ourselves through the perspective of those in community with us. Reflection is institutional, and the class of 2015 has participated in and encouraged EMU's own reflection of practices, policies, and vision. Reflection is societal, and the realities of our country and world speak to the need for a more thoughtful and reflective approach to governance. As EMU sends us off with the institution, with the instruction to walk humbly with God, I believe that reflection is part of that humble walk. And I am thankful for spending 4 years with a class who is bold, who takes risks, who takes action, yet who understands the need to blend such initiative with conversation, discernment, and reflection.
From now on, we won't primarily identify ourselves as students at Eastern Mennonite University, but the lessons we have learned here in class and among peers will stay with us. Do not forget these, but do not be afraid to continue to grow during all the new adventures ahead. Have a great weekend, despite the rain.
Thanks.
Thank you, Everett and Carissa. Each year, the senior class chooses a class gift that has particular significance for them and serves as an ongoing memory of their time here at EMU. At this time, I invite Andrew Yoder, senior class business manager, to the podium. Andrew is from Harrisonburg, Virginia, and is graduating summa cum laude with majors in both accounting and economics and a minor in finance. Andrew will present the class gift, which will be received on behalf of the university by President Schwarzentruber. Following the presentation of the class gift, Christian Parks will lead us again in singing.
By the generosity of our class and a few administrators, we were able to meet our goal of $2,015 for the senior class gift. This means that we were able to earn a matching gift from a member of the community, Mr. Bibb Frazier of Frazier Quarry. So with a total of $4,030, we will be erecting an artistically inspired bike rack for the newly renovated Science Center. This was voted on by the class, and this is what we have chosen to represent our class gift. Once again, I want to thank all of my classmates who generously donated their funds, in addition to their tuition dollars, to this class gift, and also to the Fraziers for their generosity as well. Lauren, although I don't have anything to present to you right now, I will give you a handshake. And you can expect a check in the mail very soon.
He said the check is in the mail. I'll be counting on it. On behalf of all of us at EMU, the current and future students, thank you for your generosity. And that will be a great reminder of your class as we finish the Science Center and continue our efforts to be good stewards of the earth. Your gift is a great reminder of us, our responsibilities in that regard. Thank you again so very much.
Thought I lost my pitch pipe for a second. Anywho, so the last hymn was, for me, meeting the world outside of EMU and seeing how much is actually out there and crying out to God, what do we do? And so the next hymn following that is hymn 575 in the Blue Book, Precious Lord, Take My Hand for Courage and for Fear. I'm going to ask if you are able to stand for this last song, which is in the Green Book, number 2. And this is just because the journey has just begun. We still got a ways to go, y'all. We ain't done yet.
Come along with us, the journey is long. Come along with us, the journey is long. Come
Dr. Lori Lehman, Senior Class Faculty Advisor and a member of the Education Department, will be reading our scripture for us. Lori, I invite you to come share the Word of God with us.
Our first reading is from Genesis 12, verses 1 to 3. The Lord had said to Abram, "Go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you." Our second reading is from John 13, verses 33, through John 14, verses 1 through 5. "My children, I will be with you only a little longer. You will look for me. And just as I told the Jews, so I tell you now, where I am going, you cannot come. A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." Simon Peter asked him, "Lord, where are you going?" Jesus replied, "Where I am going, you cannot follow now, but you will follow later." Peter asked, "Lord, why can't I follow you now? I will lay down my life for you." Then Jesus answered, "Will you really lay down your life for me? Very truly I tell you, before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times. Do not let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. My Father's house has many rooms. If that were not so, would I have told you that I am going there to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. You know the way to the place where I am going." Thomas said to him, "Lord, we don't know where you are going, so how can we know the way?"
Thank you, Lori. Each year, the graduating class selects the baccalaureate speaker from among the faculty. This year, the class has selected Assistant Professor of Language and Literature, Dr. Kevin Seidel. Dr. Seidel holds a BA in English Literature from the University of California, Berkeley, an MA in Interdisciplinary Christian Studies from Regent College in Vancouver, British Columbia, and a PhD in English Literature and Language from the University of Virginia. Dr. Seidel joined the EMU faculty in 2008. His teaching interests lie in religion, secularism, and literature, as well as 18th century poetry and transatlantic literature and drama. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Kevin Seidel as he speaks on the topic of Leave Your Father's House.
Leave your father's house. I've taken the title for this talk from Genesis 12, chapter 1, where God says to Abram, "Go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you." And let me just say at the outset, this will not be the talk some of you might be hoping for. Parents, if your son is moving back into his old room while he tries to find a job, save money on rent, if your daughter is moving back home and not sure what she wants to do except date the guy who is moving back into his parents' house. If you're hoping for a very hard-hitting, very literal, leave your father's house message, sorry, I will not be saying, go like Abram from your parents' basement into the nice apartment that God will help you find and pay for, within biking distance of a promising new job, and close to that cafe you like, where you are not the barista. So maybe that would be a good message for some of you to hear, but the text would give us trouble. If we were to ask, for example, when, parents, you might expect your kids to feel called into such a promised land for young college grads. Well, Genesis 12:4 says that Abram was 75 years old when he was told to leave his parents' household. So I'm not going to give a feel bad about moving back in with your parents talk. So what am I going to say? Well, I want to see what Genesis has to say about letting go of the past, about how difficult that can be. And I want to look at what the Gospel of John has to say about moving into an uncertain future. So Genesis to teach us how to look back, John to help us look forward. It's an old theme, really, this kind of talk at the crossroads, one that wise elders in every culture return to again and again, like Dominic Toretto in the latest Fast and Furious movie, Fast 7, when he tells his family, you've got to know how to use your mirrors, know what's behind you if you want to make it to where you're going. Okay, so let's start again with Genesis. The beginning of chapter 12. And listen for the past perfect tense in the report of God's speech. The Lord had said to Abram, go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you. God had told him this before. We don't know when exactly. We don't know how often. But leaving must not have been easy for Abram, who gets a fairly comprehensive list of what he needs to get away from, his country or land, his people, his father's household. He's told less about what he needs to leave for, the land I will show you. Altogether, the first words we hear of Abram's story show a calling in process, working like a crowbar to pry him loose from what he's known into an uncertain future. Difficult leavings like this recur throughout the book of Genesis. We're only 12 chapters in, and Abram already stands in a long line of people pushed or pulled out of their native place. Adam and Eve driven out of the garden, Cain driven away from his land and people to live among strangers, Noah sent with his household into the ark and out to open sea. The pattern continues with Abraham's family. The men, Isaac and Ishmael, Jacob and Esau, have their own stories of leaving their father's house. Joseph's story is the longest, the most detailed, taking up the last 13 chapters. Some of the women in Genesis have their stories of leaving. Hagar has two stories in chapter 16 and 21. Rebekah's is in chapter 24. Rachel's and Leah's in chapter 31. This pattern of moving on, the difficulty of leaving behind what we've known, tend to get overlooked in Genesis because it is so often read as a book of origins, a book about how things were in the beginning and how they may be again, if we just read it a certain way and think very hard about certain verses and try very hard to live by the fixed, eternal rules we know must be there. Even though the book itself pushes us out of the garden by the end of the third chapter, still we look back. We hold on to a time when the world was like we've always wanted it to be, when, to give a few examples of this kind of reading, religion knew more than science, when humanity could rule over the non-human creation any way we wanted to, when there were no machines, no technology, no culture of any kind, when everything was natural, organic, when maleness and femaleness were pure, unfallen, and all was as it should be between men and women. We expend enormous amounts of interpretive energy digging and sifting the first few chapters for secrets about science and gender, never minding that God has placed an angel at the exit of Eden and said, we cannot return. Still, we look back. But this Abram passage is one of numerous departures that casts the book differently, not as a book of origins, not as a book of preordained causes with unchangeable effects on the present, but a book of beginnings. A book less about going back than moving on, more about letting go of what came before and moving toward an uncertain future. In other words, Genesis is a book of commencements, a book that turns us out into the unfinished story of God. But to get caught up in that story, we have to tell the truth about the past, face it honestly. This is why Genesis is so unflinchingly honest about the failures and weaknesses of its heroes. Remembering the stories of our ancestors is vital, but there are ways of remembering that can harden us toward the past, fix us in bad forms of faith that idolize our ancestors, tangle us in grief and disappointment that our time is not as great as theirs. Genesis is written to help us close the lid on that kind of relationship to the past and begin again. We need to hear the way Genesis pushes us to leave in order to appreciate, I think, the force of Jesus' words in John 14, where he says, "In my Father's house are many rooms." These words have an edge because they imply that your Father's house does not have many rooms, that moving into his Father's house will require moving out of yours. We'll see that while Jesus comforts his disciples with hope for the future, he is also challenging them to move past their own visions of the religious life. Okay, first a little context. In chapter 13, Jesus is with his disciples in a private house somewhere in Jerusalem. They're sharing an evening meal to celebrate the Jewish festival of Passover, and Jesus is talking about his death. Peter is troubled by this talk and says he'll lay down his life to save Jesus, and Jesus says, "No, Peter, you won't. You'll deny me three times before morning." That's when Jesus says to all his disciples, "Do not let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God. Believe also in me. My Father's house has many rooms. If that were not so, would I have told you that I'm going there to prepare a place for you?" That's the NIV translation. In the King James, it's, "In my Father's house are many mansions," which is confusing architecturally. Are we supposed to imagine one big, plain house full of sprawling, high-ceilined mansions, sort of like God's version of the TARDIS from Doctor Who, or that magical tent Hermione sets up at the Quidditch match? Okay, probably not, although that would be cool. The word mansion, when it was used in the early 1600s in the King James translation, meant the primary residence of a lord, but it also meant any place where one lived or lodged, a house or apartment, sometimes just a stopping place on a journey. It translates the Greek word mone, which derives from a verb that means to abide. So, "In my Father's house are many mansions or rooms or apartments or resting places or parents' basement suites." All of these are fair translations. Still, however translated, the verses can leave us cold, or they did me for a long time. I had always been taught that my Father's house was just a metaphor for heaven, as if Jesus were saying, "Don't worry, disciples, things may be tough now, but everything will be all right after you're dead, I promise. Rooms for each of you in God's afterlife hotel," something like that. But I found myself doubting that way of interpreting the verse and found myself rereading the Gospel of John after I read a letter by the poet John Keats. So, writing to his friend John Reynolds in May 1818, Keats tried to describe William Wordsworth's achievement in poetry. Wordsworth is commonly thought to be a great nature poet, which he was, but Keats thought Wordsworth's real contribution to poetry was the way he began to explore aspects of human experience past the threshold of thought. How do you explore something we can't think about? That's the question. Keats takes up this question by comparing human life to what he calls a large mansion of many apartments. Keats says he can only describe two of those apartments. One is what he calls the infant or thoughtless chamber. This is the room we live in before we begin to think. The second is the chamber of what he calls maiden thought, where everything we think about delights us and where we'd be happy to stay forever. All right, okay so far? I gotta get a drink of water. Be amazing if I don't spill this. Okay, so two rooms of human experience. First, the room of infancy, where we stay until we learn to think. a room that many of us stay in long after preschool. I myself was in that room until probably the end of my sophomore year of college, playing Nintendo, trying to get a girlfriend, barely doing homework, just passing my classes, going through the motions of school, but not yet thinking. Then, sometime during my junior year, lights started going on. I found myself discovering new ideas everywhere when I read a book or wrote a paper or talked to a professor or talked with friends. The pleasure of those discoveries happens in the second room, Keats would say, in the room of maiden thought. But once we've been in that room for a while, our senses sharpen and we become aware, Keats says, that the world is full of misery and heartbreak, pain, sickness, and depression. He describes how thinking itself gradually darkens that room until the doors on all sides of it are set open, but all dark, all leading to dark passages. So in the room where we once saw clearly what was true, good, and beautiful, we now find ourselves squinting, puzzled, confused. Keats says, we see not the balance of good and evil. We are in a mist. And it's on the threshold of these dark passages where many of you find yourselves today, after a cross-cultural semester, after the breakdown of an intimate relationship, facing your own depression, suffering the pain or death of a loved one, managing your own addictions, anxious about the life that lies ahead of you. All the thinking you've learned to do in school does not lighten the weight of these things. Instead, the room of your life grows dim, thought opens into darkness. Now, Keats admired Wordsworth because his poetry took the first steps down into those dark passages. He points to an example in Wordsworth's poem, Tintern Abbey, where Wordsworth describes how his long familiarity with the landscape, the countryside he walked in and loved, worked to lighten what he calls the burden of the mystery of all this unintelligible world. Wordsworth knew what it was like to feel that mystery of the unintelligible world, of everything outside our customs of thought and experience, as a terrible burden. But he also knew what it was like to feel it an incredible peace. And he writes about those moments when the mysterious world remains mysterious but does not feel like a burden, when the inhuman is brought into the house of human experience, or maybe more accurately, when our human experience feels housed in the larger inhuman world that we inhabit. And this brings me back to John 14:2. In my Father's house are many mansions. Did Keats have that verse in mind while talking about the progress of poetry and human thought as a mansion with many apartments? I think so. Keats was intent on humanizing the image, reversing it, taking what in the Bible seemed to be a metaphor for heaven, for our dwelling with God after death, and turning it into a metaphor for earthly experience, for our lives here before death. But what if Keats was onto something, providing better commentary on the Gospel of John than he knew? What if Jesus is helping his disciples look for God at work in rooms of human experience until then unintelligible, shrouded in mist? What if Jesus is going to prepare those rooms starts that very night? If so, what we get in the rest of the Gospel of John is an account of the many rooms, other resting places on the journey. In light of Keats's letter, we might recognize Jesus saying something like this in John 14. In my Father's house, there are many rooms for all kinds of human experience, not just this room where we've gathered as friends, not just the room where the brave soldier pledges his life for the cause, for the sake of the leader. What Peter aspires to is not the great room in this house, no. As we learn in subsequent chapters, there is room for putting away the sword, even when Jesus is being taken. There is room in the courtyard of Caiaphas, the high priest, for disciples who fall short of their highest aspirations, who through fear and disappointment deny their friends. There is room inside the court for those like Jesus wrongly accused and tortured by the authorities. There is room on the steps of Pilate's courthouse for those publicly humiliated in front of their people. There is room at the crucifixion, room in the garden where Jesus is buried, room in the garden where Jesus is raised from the dead, room after the resurrection for those who lock themselves away for fear of persecution, room for those who doubt that Jesus is risen, even if they see the truth with their eyes, touch the truth with their hands. Room for those away from all buildings, courtyards, houses, and gardens, for those outside on the shore of the sea, where Jesus meets his disciples for breakfast, gathers them around a fire of burning coals with fish on it and some bread. Before Keats, I thought, whatever housekeeping Jesus had in mind in John 14 started after death, after Jesus left the earth in heaven, or wherever it is that we try foolishly to confine God. But after reading Keats, it seems clear that Jesus is telling his disciples that God takes care of far more than we think. Our fear of death, betrayal, failure, our unjust suffering, public humiliation, death itself, and the hope of resurrection. The many rooms of God's house extend from here into eternity, so that God accommodates us not only after death, but also now, here, in this life. Like so much good art, the Gospel of John ends by turning us out beyond its pages. It lets us step away from the painting, stand up and leave the theater, close the book for now, and return to our lives with renewed vigor. John says, Jesus did many other things as well. If every one of them were written down, I suppose that even the whole world would not have room for the books that would be written. So this is my charge to you graduates. House what you can with your writing. Travel every dark passage and put it to paint or photography. Put it to the test in a laboratory. Try to catch it with equations. Go in your lab work or social work, your teaching or hospital work or peacemaking. Go where no one else thinks to go. Make room for all of it. And Jesus will still be doing many other things, making new rooms in the church and outside it, in the upper rooms and by the sea. So follow him there. Find him out there. Go. Leave. And learn to live in the world that you don't yet know.
Thank you, Kevin. That was excellent. To conclude this service, we'll be led in a dedication prayer by our provost, Dr. Fred Niss. After the prayer, we invite you to take a short break and then rejoin us in Martin Chapel for a concert featuring student talent from our music department. The concert will begin at 8:15 and last approximately 45 minutes. President Lauren and Pat Schwarzentruber also cordially invite all graduates, family members, and faculty to a reception in the University Commons just outside the University Bookstore. The president's reception will open at 8:30 p.m. and be continuing after the concert. You're welcome to make your way there at any time. I do have one additional announcement to add. If you've been outside and following the weather forecast, you're aware that it is not particularly agreeable to having an outdoor commencement. Therefore, the decision has been made that the commencement services tomorrow will be held in University Commons. Graduates should report to the basement of this building at 12:15. You can all check the EMU website for information about parking and any other details that you might need for making that change from the lawn to the University Commons for commencement. Provost Niss.
Please join me in a prayer of dedication for the class of 2015 and for all of us. Loving God, we come to you this evening with hearts full of gratitude for all your many gifts to us. You have blessed us throughout our lives' journeys
whose paths have brought us to this weekend. We express our thanks by dedicating ourselves and each other to your service as we embody your love and passion for the world. We are grateful for the many enriching relationships we have formed in this community of learning. We dedicate ourselves and each other to nurturing our bonds, to nurturing our bonds with each other, even as we expand our network of relationships in the many places to which we will be going. We are grateful for the gifts of new knowledge about your world and for enlarged understandings of the complex problems we face in our lives together as human beings inhabiting a common planet. We dedicate ourselves and each other to take the light of knowledge with us into the corners of darkness in our world, sharing our understandings with others, that we all may more effectively engage the forces that constrain our lives and hinder our flourishing. We are grateful for the many wonderful differences of culture, identity, faith, and practice discovered in our encounters with other places and with other people here on campus and around the world. We dedicate ourselves and each other to always meet the other with respect, joy, wonder, and hope for the possibilities that await us in your wondrous, diverse creation. During our years at EMU, our hearts, minds, and hands have been changed. We are grateful for the way our hearts were touched and softened by our encounters with others and our experiences with difficult situations. We dedicate ourselves and each other to express compassion in our dealings with your children and to surround hard things with hearts softened by your love. We are grateful for the ways our minds have been opened, our thinking sharpened, and our curiosity piqued. We dedicate ourselves and each other to a life of perpetual learning, to engage the wonder of your creation every day, always to ask the important questions, and never to lose our curiosity. We are grateful for the ways our hands have been empowered by new abilities and enhanced skills in our various disciplines. We dedicate ourselves and each other to open our hands in generosity to one another and the world, sharing our talents in the pursuit of peace and justice, enabling your will to be done on earth as it is in heaven. We thank you and dedicate ourselves to you in the way of Jesus. Amen.